excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can't put it in the win column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get at it. Happy Thursday. It is Thursday, February 6th, and this hour of Flames Talk is underway with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. What's up, Vix? How are we doing on this Thursday?
Oh, we're doing awesome, buddy. It's a game day. Let's go.
It is a game day. The Colorado Avalanche are in town. And on this night, on this Thursday, that also means that Oliver Shillington is in town. The former Flames second-round pick, the former Flames defenseman, is back at the Scotiabank Saddledome for the first time since signing with Colorado this summer, for the first time since his time with the Flames came to an end. And it was a strange situation, as I think the overwhelming feeling as last year was playing out, when Oliver returned in that super emotional night in January when he first came back and rejoined the Flames after 18 months off as against the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, it was a really special night. And, yep. You know, I think the prevailing thought was, as Shillington became a regular back on Calgary's blue line, that he would be back and they would re-sign him and just it would go down that road. And it didn't. And so it was a strange situation and there were a lot of heads scratched in terms of why it didn't happen because it did feel like such a natural fit. Now, Shillington has played in 8 games as a member of the Avalanche, has a goal and 2 points in those 8 games, was kind of in and out of the lineup in October, and then started to really find it in November, then got hurt, has missed 32 consecutive games, 31 of them with that injury, and then was healthy scratched, being available for the first time a couple nights ago against Colorado. Shillington back in the building, and he spoke with us on Thursday morning inside the Avalanche locker room as he makes his return to the Scotiabank Saddledome.
No, fun, a lot of emotions, but just fun in general. I've been injured for 2 months, so luckily everything was timed and everything looked well for this trip for me to come back. So I'm just happy to be back in Calgary in general and looking forward to a good game. But yeah, special feeling overall.
What's what goes through your mind as you walk through the visitors area for the first time as you walk back to the spring ball, right?
Yeah, I mean, like coming through that way feels special because usually you're coming another way. So everything's just it's been special this day, and I'm just going to look forward to the game. I'm just excited for it.
What about, you think about Calgary and obviously the time here, and just, what stands out to you when you come back in? Are you thinking about any of that stuff, some of the memories?
Oh, lots of things. I mean, I kind of grew up here. A lot of friendships that I still have, a lot of familiar faces that I still enjoy seeing. So, you know, it brings back a lot of memories, a lot of good memories. And I'm grateful for the time here, and I learned a lot and, you know, shaped me as a hockey player here. So I'm very grateful for the time here.
Think about Rasmus and going through the draft together, and yes. It's been a while since you played against against him, right?
I think we played against each other when we were like kids, a long time ago. So yeah, this is our first professional game against each other. So no, it's good to see those guys. Saw a few yesterday. So yeah, it's good to see them.
How have you felt on ice? Fit has been.
It's been different. I mean, I've liked it. I've enjoyed it, but it's been different. Had injuries. Maybe haven't been the start I was hoping for. But I just want to finish it off now, good, and I'm feeling good. So I'm just excited to get back playing again.
I mean, I know a lot of fans really want you to stay, and it was a few months ago. Do you reflect on how that free agency process came and everything of that nature, Oliver?
It was a lot that happened in that time. I'm not going to comment about everything, but it was a lot that happened, and it was a new place for me to be in also. So, yeah, it was a new world. There was a lot of stuff that happened, and now I'm here. So, yeah.
That's Oliver Shillington when he spoke with us inside the Flames, the Avalanche locker room, rather, on Thursday morning. And you know, it was a really strange situation how things played out and why it didn't end up with a return. I mean, I remember multiple times kind of feeling like, oh, you know, you're hearing that it's close and that, you know, something is going to get done. Obviously, didn't. I do want to say I never thought he owed the Flames anything. I think that he... just like anybody else, I think he's a guy that deserves to go test the market and deserves to be an independent contractor. Yep. Just like anybody else. And I know that there was a sense that, well, the Flames, you know, were really, really good about the whole situation. And I don't want to say the Flames weren't good about the situation. The Flames did right by Oliver Shillington. They did. But they should have done right by him under all circumstances, and it shouldn't have been, and it wasn't ever conditional, but it shouldn't have been conditional on, well, that means you're going to give us a sweetheart deal and you're going to stay. And it was never conditional, and the Flames had an offer on the table to him. I do think there was, as I said, going all the way back to the summer, Vix, I think that there was an offer that the Shillington camp thought was going to materialize. I think that offer, for whatever reason, didn't come through. I think that there was a situation where something changed with the team that was going to give the offer on multi-years, and all of a sudden that fell through. By that time, the Flames had already gone down the road and had already signed Jake Bean, and Bean, as a left side 26, 27 year old defenseman, kind of filled the role that Shillington was in. And so from there, you know, there wasn't as natural a fit anymore. And I still believe the Flames had an offer on the table there. I think it was I think it was initially higher than what he got in Colorado, but then after the situation played itself out, the Flames maybe brought the offer a little bit down. He decided to sign in Colorado. It hasn't been the year he was looking for, but I still don't believe that he owed the team anything. If he wanted to go and look elsewhere, if he felt like a change of scenery based on everything that happened over the last couple of years was what he needed, then he's fully, go and get that change of scenery. And it was good to see him back inside the locker room, because I've always just had a lot of appreciation prior to what he went through, and then after all of what he went through, eventually working his way back to the NHL. And it was good to see him on Thursday morning.
Yeah, that was well said, and maybe I'm from a little bit of a biased perspective being a contractor myself, but yeah, you owe it to yourself to see what else is out there. It really felt like there was another deal that never came to fruition, and just like you don't hold it against Oliver Shillington for not just circling back with the Flames right off the hop, you have to, you know, realize that the Flames weren't in a position to wait around to see what happened either, and went about their business operating under the assumption that they needed to bring someone in, i.e. Jake Bean, to replace the spot that maybe perhaps Shillington was in. But it was a weird scenario all the way around, because he comes back and it felt like a contract was going to get done. You get by the trade deadline and you feel a contract is going to get done, and you get closer to July 1 and you still feel like a contract's going to get done, and then just nothing happens to materialize. And so I think that might have been difficult from the outside to understand a little bit, but it was absolutely fantastic seeing him back here, that beaming smile in the visitor's locker room, which was a little weird. And he said, you know, it was a little strange coming in the other way too. It's not necessarily the path through the Saddle Dome that he's used to, but all in all, it was really good to see him today. And yeah, it hasn't been the start to his Avalanche tenure that you would have wanted. They were troublesome early on in the defensive end and goaltending, and he went through some illness, and of course he went through an injury that's kept him out since late November, a huge chunk of time. And so now he's playing catch up, was likely to get into both of the remaining games for the Avalanche heading into that break, just so they can evaluate.
Yeah, no Josh Manson, right?
No Josh Manson for the next two games for the Colorado Avalanche. He's day to day after sustaining an injury a couple days ago at Vancouver. So opportunity knocks for Oliver Shillington and the Colorado Avalanche.
Kelly, I think, sums it up perfectly on the text line. He did not owe the Flames anything. That being said, he and his agent probably misjudged the market and opportunity. And I think that, and I don't even know if it was a full-on misjudging. I do think that there was a deal that they thought was on the table that fell through for whatever reason, and so as a result the market then turned itself into not as hospitable to where he was, because it fell through so late in the game. And that's the risk sometimes you take, right?
Yeah, that's the business side of the sport, where You feel like you have something. Perhaps circumstances change, and it's a game of musical chairs once free agency opens, and suddenly you look around and you don't have a dance partner. And he had to wait till August 5th, I think it was, to sign with the Avalanche. So, I mean, at the end of the day, there's the personal side of the sport, and that's fine. There's the business side of the sport, and that's fine too. And it feels like he got a little bit jammed up on the business side of things.
And it happens, and he's still got lots of season in Colorado to, you know, he's still got lots of time with the Avalanche to, you know, earn himself another contract. A few other texts at 960-960. Wanted to read, trying to think the text that I really wanted to read on this front. But I think the important point is, I can't find the text right now. I was just going to push back on something. The important point to me is, maybe going and looking for another opportunity was what the guy's brain needed.
Yeah.
And it's not to suggest that he wasn't great. And I'm not, I understand being a little like, oh, WTF, like, after all that, why not sign back with the Flames? Like, I do understand the questioning, but I don't think it's fair to then go from that to, this guy's classless, or he wasn't grateful, or he took advantage of the Flames. I think that's BS. Because what if for his mental health, what if for his situation, getting away from the familiarity and getting away from the place that he was a part of when things kind of blew up in his life, Who are we to judge if that's the right decision or not? And I always want to make sure that we push back on that. And so I don't think, like, this is one that I would be really against. Like, yeah, boo Matthew Tkachuk and boo Adam Fox and boo Noah Hanifin and Elias Lindholm or whoever, Nikita Zadorov, so on and so forth. I just don't think Shillington is a guy that would deserve that myself.
Well, mental health is health. At the end of the day, if he had blown out his knee and then went to unrestricted free agency and ended up signing elsewhere, are we even having this conversation? Probably not. Mental health at the end of the day is health. Yep. Simple as that.
Yep. Somebody else says, how would he have another offer before July 1st? Sounds like collusion. Welcome to the NHL. You think that they just you think that Jake Bean just signed his deal? They're like, oh, Calgary's here. Let's sign. No, every GM talks to every agent. These things are all ironed out in advance. Is it collusion? Yes. Is it?
Can it be collusion if 32 organizations?
Well, exactly. Like, every team is doing it. So yes, I guess technically it is collusion or circumvention or whatever. But it is the worst-kept secret in the NHL that all 32 GMs talk to all however many agents, and like 80% of the deals that get signed on July 1st have been agreed upon for weeks in advance. And so, welcome. Like, it's like
there's a reason 90 deals are announced at 12:01
exactly,
on July 1.
Exactly. Like, right?
Or
like,
whenever it opens.
It's not like, oh,
exactly,
free agency's open. Let me just make a call. Hey, my guy wants to play here. Let me draft up the contract details. We'll get it done in 1 minute. Like, no, these things are done weeks in advance, right?
Yeah, that's the worst guarded secret in the history
right?
of time. It's like, remember when the NHL had that negotiating period a week before?
It still exists. I mean, go look at what's happening in the CFL right now. Their their legal tampering window is open. It's legal. It's their free agency negotiation window. Like, everything's done. Like, everybody goes and talks to teams and contracts get reported and everything's done already. So come free agency next week in the CFL, it'll be like, yeah, well, we know that the Stamps are signing that guy, and like, we know Damon Webb's signing with the Stampeders, or it's like, oh yeah, we know where Geno Lewis is going, and we know, like, all these things are already done. So at least this way, it's like it's not even frowned upon. It's like, you know, accepted illegal tampering is basically what happens leading up to NHL free agency.
Again, worst kept secret that there is. So I wouldn't be firing in a text on, how could this have happened? I mean, we've seen $100 million contracts announced 30
seconds after
the free agency period opens. It's not like every player takes the first offer that comes their way, signs the dotted line as quickly as they can scan that document and email it back. It's It's not really a guarded secret. I don't know what else to say on that.
That's a very, very fair point by you. Steinberg and Vickers on this hour of Flames Talk. You know, the Flames blue line has been one heck of a jigsaw puzzle this year. I think that's very fair to say.
Yeah.
Even when Kevin Ball has been in the lineup, and right now they are definitely feeling the effects of no Kevin Ball, but even when he and Rasmus Anderson have been a steady pairing, it has been a revolving door of other guys, and it's been a big-time jigsaw puzzle. A lot of moving parts when it comes to setting your six defensemen each and every night. But, you know, I don't think anybody saw this coming, and I don't think anybody would have suggested this when he was claimed off of waivers last year or when he started training camp for most number eight on the depth chart. But I keep saying it, like, where the hell would this team be without Joel Hanley this year?
I'll take the L, because when training camp was coming to a close and it was like, okay, are you putting Pelletier on waivers and you're going to carry eight defensemen? What are you doing? And I understood at that time, like, okay, maybe you don't want to clog up the blue line in the American Hockey League because they had so many young players that were coming in and joining the Wranglers. But then he goes from the number eight to the number six, or however you want to slot him, to playing in a top four role, to playing in a top pair role. And listen, there's nothing sexy about his game. But that's probably the thing that's made him the most successful this season, is he steps out on the ice. He knows what he's able to do. He knows what he's not able to do. And anything that he knows he's not able to do, he doesn't try and execute something that's outside of his skill set. And that's made him a very dependable partner for Mackenzie Weegar. It's made him a very dependable partner for Rasmus Anderson. And it's made him almost an – it's weird to say, because, again, he was the number eight. And we're talking respectfully Joel Hanley. We're talking Joel Hanley. But he's almost an invaluable piece of this decor right now. Like, of all the players on the decor that aren't – that are healthy, first of all, and that aren't Rasmus Anderson, Mackenzie Weegar, Braden Pahal, He's your next set and forget guy.
Yep.
You've got four right now with Ball hurt. Hanley's one of your set and forget guys.
And I give him a lot of credit because of he's played in every role. He's played in the getting healthy scratched role where, you know what? Game day, you're getting bag skated, then you're working out while the game's going on.
Yeah.
So he's done that, and he's done a lot to that. He has played with Braden Pahal on the third pair. He has played mostly with Mackenzie Weegar on that pair, and most recently has been playing on the left side with Rasmus Anderson since Kevin Ball has gone down. Like, the ability to go up and down the blue line and to play everywhere and be generally fairly steady there, I've been really impressed with what this guy's been able to do. And it, like, that waiver claim feels far more important than it did at the time. I had a chance to catch up with Joel Hanley after practice. This was on Wednesday morning after practice, and wanted to chat to him just about that, playing with everybody and how he's been able to do it and how he's been able to generally excel at it this year.
I just wanted to ask you about kind of the difference in playing with the different partners that you've played this year, and less about playing with them, but just more about how you're able to kind of be steady with whoever you're playing with, and what the key to that is.
I think it's just the style of play that I play. I feel like I try to play a pretty solid game defensively. That's my main goal, and I still think I have more to grow, like, offensively and stuff, but I think over my career I've tried not to give up the defensive side of the things and try to, you know, force things, but it's just something I try to work on, is to be a good, reliable defenseman and just try to be good defensively.
Would that be the word, kind of like predictability? Would that be a good way to describe it?
I think so. Like, I try to stick by the structure and the way we play, and yeah, I don't know. My game's pretty simple, so I just try to be hard and, you know, just be available for, you know, any passes and stuff. So I'll just try to be there for my partner.
How have you felt about the last number of months when it's kind of been a pretty regular stretch in the lineup here?
It's been great. Yeah, I mean, anytime you can play. And I felt like over my career I've had to earn a lot of my games. So to get like a stretch like this, it's been awesome. And I just try to get better every day and hopefully help the team win.
when you came here last season, I remember talking to you on the phone, and you were really excited just about that, the whole idea of opportunity. But when you got claimed, like, would you have been able to envision the way it's going right now, playing top 4 minutes, so on and so forth?
Probably not. Yeah, probably not. Yeah, I mean, it's always on my radar. Like, it's always something I've wanted to do. And, yeah, I think, you know, over the past couple weeks, I think I've kind of surprised myself a bit. And, you know, and it's good that I have the ability to do it, and it's been good.
When you first got that opportunity to play with McKenzie, like, a lot of times you hear in pro sports that you got to be ready for your opportunity. When you see that on the board and you see an opportunity to play top 4 minutes, is that kind of for you like, okay, this is an opportunity, I got to seize it?
Maybe a little bit, yeah. Like, it was, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, man, is this right? But no, yeah, it was cool. And I think it was, the first game was against Florida, so they obviously have a good forward group. And yeah, I think the big thing, like, we play a great team game, so I just try to, you know, fit into that structure. And obviously playing with guys like Weegs and Andy makes my job a little easier, and they're great players, so just try to support them.
Yeah, I was going to say, specifically with those two, just how easy are they to play with as a D partner?
Yeah, I mean, Andy's in Sweden, obviously, and Weegs is up for Canada, so they're obviously great players, and both a little different, but I think similar in ways as well. They're great offensive players and great with the puck and great in transition, and they're both, like, hard defensively and break up plays, and yeah, so just overall, I think they're great players.
That's Nacho. Joel Hanley had a chance to chat with him a little earlier this week, and again, like, imagine where this team is if that guy doesn't find a way to be a pretty solid piece for them back there. He's actually got some of the better underlyings on the team, and nothing spectacular, Vix, but
Need spectacular.
No,
him.
And you don't really want that. You've got, like, he knows who he's playing with. He's playing with a guy, as he mentioned, guy who's playing for Team Sweden and a guy who's in the mix for Team Canada. So he just needs to go be himself, play his role, and amongst defensemen, he's got some of the better metrics this year, and he's been able to hold his own and play generally pretty steady when he's been out there.
Well, he's averaging 18 minutes a night since December 15th, where that's a bit of a ramp up for a guy that, again, started as the eight, was a healthy scratch for a significant chunk of time. And suddenly he's been able to inject himself into this lineup as a top four defenseman. And again, yeah, it's not a sexy game that he plays. He's not going to have the puck on his stick when you need a game-winning goal. But the fact that he can go out there and give you dependable minutes, and the coaching staff knows exactly what you're going to give them day in, day out, game in, game out, shift in, shift out.
Exactly.
Guys like that, there's some value there.
And there is a ton of value in what he's been able to bring to the group this year. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and I'm telling you, this is your last chance. Do you want to go to the Four Nations Face-Off for free with tickets, travel, and accommodation? Vickers, you can't win.
Oh, I thought you were talking to me directly.
But if you're listening right now, you can. Well, that's a old radio trick, you know, now a radio podcast trick. Speak as if you're only talking to one person. Huh. So don't say, hey, everyone. You say, hey, you, listening right there on your computer or in your on your AirPods or in your car. You, right there. I'm talking to you only. Do you want to go to the Four Nations Face-Off, which is coming up next week? Your last chance is this coming Friday, and here we are on Thursday. So if you're listening right now, whenever you're listening, just go and enter. Here's the deal. Four Nations Face-Off starts next week in Montreal and Boston, Canada, Finland, Sweden, and the United States. We've got VIP packages to give away and one more to give away through Rogers Beyond the Seat. We're giving away a pair of tickets plus travel and accommodations, and you can go get all the details right now at rogers.com/Four Nations and then catch every game of the Four Nations Face-Off exclusively on Sportsnet and Sportsnet Plus. But if you want to go learn more, and more importantly, with time running out, if you want to go enter, go to rogers.com/Four Nations.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now to check in with our goaltending expert. It's Thursday, which means we get a chance to chat with this gentleman. It's Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine and NHL.com in Vancouver. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. It's Steinberg, Aaron Vickers along with you. Hello, Mr. Woodley.
How are we, guys? Snow-covered Vancouver right now, and I got to tell you, it's at times like this that I wish I was in Calgary, where people actually knew how to handle a little snowfall.
Yeah.
It's been outright embarrassing to be on the road, especially the first day. I'm not sure what was worse. I was driving in. The Canucks had just made the big trade. Four guys on the ice early Sunday morning, like they were on the ice at 9:30 for a 5 o'clock start. So left about 8 because of the snowfall. Not sure what was worse: the Tesla doing 360s in front of me into the ditch on Highway 99. Or the guy in the bright orange Mustang with summer tires and rear-wheel drive doing 35 kilometers an hour down the highway. It was Vancouver in full force in the snow. We do not know how to handle this stuff.
Yeah, we're a little more versed at snow driving. We're a little more versed at when to put our winters on, all those types of things. You know, different climates. I don't blame you. I don't know if those Teslas, the Tesla per capita in Vancouver slightly higher than it is here in Calgary. Don't think those bad boys are made for Calgary driving.
No, especially the rear-wheel drive ones. It used to be in Vancouver, it was the BMWs before they went xDrive. As soon as it snowed, you could count on see them spun out on the side of the road on every hill in Vancouver. The rear-wheel drive Teslas have replaced them as the imbeciles of choice when the snow hits.
That's awesome.
Tell me how you really feel, Woodley.
I like it.
Listen, I'm from here, but like I can still drive in the snow. It's embarrassing, guys. It's just outright embarrassing. So kudos to Calgary. Y'all know how to handle a little bit of the white stuff.
I like it. We've talked a lot about Dustin Wolf this year and at times have sprinkled in some Dan Vladar. And, you know, Dan Vladar goes into Seattle in a really tough situation on Sunday night, and he has not picked up a win at the time since December 10th. Didn't have a ton of workload between December 10th and that game on Sunday. But he goes in, he makes 29 on 31, and he gives the Flames a quality start when they needed it. They were bagged. They were on the second half of back-to-back, third and four. Travel, late entry into Seattle, then an extra like 90 minutes on the tarmac waiting for customs. So like that was a bagged group, especially in the back 40 minutes of that hockey game. That has to be a huge boost confidence-wise, mentally, for Vladar to finally be back on the winning side of things.
Well, you'd think so, and it's well-deserved, right? Because for all the reasons you said, like that was what they like to call a scheduled loss for a lot of teams. And, you know, both the goals that go in are high danger because everything he's supposed to do on the quote-unquote lower danger and mid-danger shots doesn't give up any. And honestly, that's the difference in the game. Calgary scores 3. 2 of them are high danger, and one of them's low, right? So sometimes that's the toughest thing to do when you're not playing, is to sort of just make sure you don't give up any bad ones. And it can't be your mindset going in either. Like, you can't be thinking in those terms in any way, shape, or form. And that's part of what makes this such a difficult mental battle. We've talked in the past. You guys know I'm a fan of all the – and you've seen it there in Calgary in person, like – all the times over the years where he's given them really good stretches of games, filling in at different times, getting on a roll. This is a much harder role. It's a much harder job to sort of try and fill in more sporadically and find your game when you're not playing it regularly enough. And I thought he did a really nice job the other night in Seattle. And if he does take confidence and build confidence from it, it's well-deserved.
And right now, you know, whenever we talk about the future of the Flames goaltending position, you know, there's Dan Vladar, who's a pending unrestricted free agent. We know Dustin Wolf's not going anywhere, and at some point in the next number of weeks, we're going to need to get into a Dustin Wolf contract talk with you. But The fly in the ointment is Devin Cooley, who just finished at the AHL All-Star Game this week. He has been the best or one of the best goalies in the American League this year. And he's seeing a workload, Kev, that he's never seen before in pro hockey. I know we've talked a lot over the last number of months, even leading up to him signing here, about Woodley and the potential he's had. But it's the workload specifically that's really interesting to me, because he's already passed the highest amount of games he's played in pro hockey. Just how big a development year are we talking about potentially here?
Yeah, and that's coming off missing some time with injury, right? With the head injury. So,
yep.
Which I would say maybe don't try the Dominic Hasek barrel roll in the All-Star game.
I would imagine his coaches would probably feel the same on that front.
Yeah, nothing like just, you know, throwing your head alongside the ice and giving it a, maybe just trying to stretch out the neck a little bit. Entertaining, though, and I do love the fact he's able to laugh at it afterwards. I hadn't thought, to be honest, of the workload, and you're right, that is important. Although, again, the challenge at the next level may be finding that level of consistency. You know, we just talked about it with Dan Vladar when you're maybe not playing as much. But certainly going through that, and learning to manage your game when you don't have time to, you know, get the same reps in as you normally would with the goalie coach. Although, again, it's different in the American League because it tends to be a weekend games league and there's a lot of practice time midweek, so there'll still be adjustments. But those are all positives, right? Like, he continues to grow. I think when you watch his game, you know, tactically and technically now, and you compare it, and I've actually working on a piece with some video in it for In Goal, sort of juxtaposing his game before and after arriving in Calgary, especially before getting to San Jose last season to now. And honestly, outside of, you know, the obvious, the size and the frame and the mannerisms, from a technical and tactical standpoint, you'd be hard pressed to tell me it's the same goalie. So much quieter back there. The athleticism that's always been, you know, on the resume for him is so much more controlled. He's relying on it far less. You know, that's an adjustment that Dustin Wolf made in the minor leagues a couple of years ago. And there was some give and take to it, sometimes when maybe he got away from it and then went back to it. And to see Cooley do it in pretty much 1 year, translated as quickly as he has, buy into it and stay comfortable with it, while also playing, as you said, more games, or on pace to play more games than he ever has as a pro, like, those are all boxes that sort of get checked on the right side of the ledger for him as a learner and as a developing goaltender, right? Like, you know, you're not having to, like, you lead this horse to water and he's ready to drink. You don't need to try and force concepts down his throat. He's a really good thinker of the game. And you know, and clearly he's on the same page with Mackenzie Skavsky and with Jason LaBarbera and with the changes they're trying to make in his game and the ability to implement them in real time while also playing, you know, more games than he has. And those are all real positives moving forward.
Yep. Kevin Woodley's with us. He is our goaltending expert from In Goal Magazine, NHL.com. He joins us Thursdays here on Flames Talk. It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers. Mr. Vickers.
Kev, Colorado's coming through town. They just rolled through Vancouver as well. And after cornering the market on all the wooden goalies, Blackwood, Wedgwood, I don't know if there's any else they can pluck out of somewhere. But how have they stabilized things between the pipes this season by those two additions in your mind?
Well, it would undermine their effort to stabilize it between the pipes. But if they ever need a practice goalie, I know a guy with the last name that includes the word wood that would.
Well done, Kevin. Well done.
Yeah, E-Bug, let's go.
Hey, I'd work for league minimum. Absolutely.
Are you allowed to be an E-Bug?
I've never played professionally. So technically, I think it would be a disaster in every other way, shape, or form. About the only thing that I've said to a few guys over the years, because we've had a couple times when teams have come in and not even had a practice goalie, It would be a little hard, Aaron, I think, you know, in the NHL.com job. You imagine me down there trying to write my story on my laptop sitting on the bench? That would be a heck of a story. But so that might get in the way. But I've said a couple times in practice, like, hey, listen, like, if you need a target, like, I get to say I've done it, and guaranteed your shooters are coming away feeling more confident than they've ever felt before. So it's win-win. In terms of what they've done, they've remade their crease, obviously. And I think the real lesson here, because it's been successful, and I don't know if Wedgwood has joined them. Bednar told me when I asked on Tuesday when they're in here that it was possible Wedgwood would join them on the trip. But right now, the backup, at least when they came through Vancouver, was Trent Miner, Vancouver Giants grad.
Yep.
And with the back-to-backs to finish his trip, a chance he gets in. But to get back to what they've done, the lesson to me is if you have questions in your crease, move early on it. Like, don't wait until the trade deadline. We've seen how few of those moves tend to pan out. I've written stories, it seems like, every year about why. And the biggest takeaway, and some of it is, you know, that horses for courses, finding the right goalie for the right team. One size does not fit all. And sometimes I think in the past teams haven't done their due diligence and they've gone out and acquired goaltenders because they're quote-unquote good goaltenders, but they might not necessarily be good fits for their team. And as that education process has continued and teams are more cognizant of those things, the last lesson is that you can't wait until the trade deadline because there's just not enough games left in the season, especially when you consider workload and the guy you get is not going to play all of them, for them to feel comfortable. It's a 20-plus game process behind a new team. And again, it's not systems. There's only so many. It's tendencies within the system. You know, which defenseman can you trust to take away that backdoor seam? Which defenseman's going to pinch off a rush at the blue line? Who's going to do it at the top of the circle? Who might wait until it gets closer to the hash mark? Little tendencies that affect how you read and how you play off the guys in front of you. Mackenzie Blackwood has talked to me about this, about how much easier it was for him to come in when he did because there wasn't the pressure of a deadline and having only so many starts to get comfortable. And even though he had success right away, like some people sort of countered with, well, look how good he is so soon, that tells you it would have worked, you know, if it was a March 7th deal, he would actually counter and say, no, because then I would have been worried about it. This just allowed him to go in and relax and play and not think about having to fit in so quickly. And so to me, that's the takeaway here. If you're going to make major moves with your goaltenders and you're a team with playoff aspirations, do it sooner rather than later. And I think the success that they're having in Colorado is a great example for how that can work.
So is the timeline the biggest driver in his success? Because it's funny you mentioned that 20-game mark. He's going to make his 20th start, his 21st appearance. He's got a 2.04 goals against average and a .926 save percentage.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's a couple of things here. One, always had the tools. I mean, you've been in the room with him. Like, this guy's a monster, right? And he's like a linebacker on skates. I remember when he was in New Jersey, some of his crease mates at the time telling me, you know, like, this guy could be a linebacker in the NFL. Like, he's just a physical specimen. Moves well. He's huge. He's agile. He's athletic. Like, he has all the tools.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were injuries, I think, in Jersey, some of them that got overlooked, or I think he got accused of inconsistency when really he was trying to play through things that, you know, frankly, knowing a few of the things, bordered on absurd. But that's not casting aspersions at Jersey. He wanted to do it. It wasn't unsafe, but it was like the pain tolerance level or the exposure level to that side of things was like, really, you're doing this. So I think that played a role in sort of some of the inconsistency you saw there. And then he goes to San Jose where they're not a great team, but he had, you know, relative to adjusted, some pretty good numbers. The other part of this, and this is maybe why it's been easier to transition, and Eunice Corposalo told me the same thing about when he went from Columbus to L.A. This is one of the best defensive teams in hockey, right? Like, that's a challenge for Calgary tonight who, you know, by the way, when I looked up the numbers and you talk about, you know, Dan Vladar and the pressure that goes into a game like that, I mean, offensively since January 1st, 31st in expected goals for 5-on-5 based on high danger chances, 30th off the rush, 32nd in zone, only the power play at 22nd, you know, is not near the bottom of the league. Like, they're not producing, and that's going to be a tough ask against Colorado because they are a top three defensive team. And so when you are going into a new team as a goaltender, for all the skill and talent that Blackwood has, the demands are different in Colorado, right? Like, it's a more predictable defensive environment, much like what Korpisalo had when he went into Los Angeles at the trade deadline and had immediate success that year. The biggest challenge for Blackwood has been all the shots he used to face in San Jose allowed him to sort of more easily find a rhythm and a timing in a game, and he doesn't get nearly as many in Colorado. So you still have to make a handful of high-danger stops. It's just you've got, like, 8 or 9 or 10 low danger to sort of help you feel good, whereas in San Jose it would be 21 to 25 low danger shots. So more pressure, less shots, that's the biggest adjustment. Everything else, like, Colorado's kind of a goaltender's dream in terms of, you know, the defensive structure and the predictability with which they play.
By the way, Mackenzie Blackwood laughed at one of Vicker's jokes on Thursday morning.
So I have that going for
me. So he's also, he also is has a good sense of humor. Last thought, and that would be on the market that you're in and the goaltender that you cover a lot. That'd be Thatcher Demko. I saw it on Twitter a lot after he blanked Colorado on Tuesday night. For Thatcher and how difficult this season has been on and off the ice, how big must have that been? I guess just some of your observations on Demko and that big shutout for Vancouver two nights ago.
Well, I mean, there was there was a flurry in the second period of, and if you watch the highlights, I'm sure it was on there. It started with Makar walking down into the sort of slot edge of the circle area, and he makes a great glove save where he doesn't get it clean, but he gets a good piece of it. And it sets off, you know, a minute and a half of chaos in the zone. He makes another backdoor save. I think it was off Netches, and then wraps it all up. Like, they were pinned by Makar and the MacKinnon line and just tic-tac-toeing it around the zone. A couple of moments within there where Demko got a little bit scrambly, but he got his feet back under him, settled down, wraps it up with a nice controlled glove save, gets the whistle that they needed. It was sort of that vintage highlight reel Thatcher Demko. And, you know, then honestly, to their credit, and Jared Bednar didn't love the way Colorado played. Part of it was power plays against, like, Vancouver going in the power play for large chunks of the third period. But the Avs only generated 4 in the third period. This has been, obviously, for a lot of reasons, a really trying season for Demko. I probably underestimated how tough this would be mentally for him after so much time off. We saw Swayman struggle to get back to his form, and all he did was miss training camp. Demko's missed his entire offseason, his summer routine, and he's normally in Vancouver working with the goalie coaches daily starting August 1st. So losing all those reps, losing all that timing, you know, having to learn to trust his body again, like, it's been a lot. And it's taken longer than we're used to seeing for him to sort of find his game. Ironically, I thought it looked like he found something when they lost 6-2 to Edmonton. And it was in the second period, I'm like, he looks like Thatcher Demko to me. And maybe it was even in the first period, but nobody could tell because they were so terrible defensively early that he just got lit. And I'm not even sure that, you know, he said after the game the other night that he knows where his game is at. And even though the results haven't been there, he feels like his game is getting to this form. He's got a 9.43 in his last three starts. And I thought that was interesting after I'd kind of noticed that, you know, I thought he played well in that Edmonton game. So I don't know if maybe he found it sooner than that or if I saw the same things he was feeling. But it looks like it's coming back. It's still not perfect. There's still times where the execution, that crispness, you know, hitting every spot in his post, the entries, the exits, the pace that allow him to stay ahead of plays. He'll miss a post. He'll miss a spot. He'll get a little behind. So it's still a work in progress, but it looks so much cleaner. He's leading with vision now. He was reaching a lot with his body, and therefore you open up, whereas now it's head first. Everything follows. Beating plays to spots. The pace is back. It looks more like the old Thatcher Demko. And if they can find that somewhat consistently alongside the way Lankinen's played throughout the year, that could give them something special down the stretch as they try and stay in this playoff race with Calgary. The other part of the challenge that Demko has faced, because the thing that Lankinen's done better than anything is bail the team out during bad starts. And it's been a problem all year long. And frankly, it was a problem in the Avalanche game. Colorado hit three posts in the first period of that game. right? Like, and so maybe it's a different game. Now, listen, one of them, I think Demko was a 2-on-1 with Netchis and McKinnon. I think he might have got a piece of it before it hit the post. Two were Cale Makar, like precision shots from the point through multiple layers of traffic. The second one bounced off the post crossbar seam right to McKinnon, and Demko made a hell of a save off that. So it's not like he was getting lucky that they were hitting the post. But, you know, there were some element of the other team's skill, and he played a part in making sure all they had was the post, and then he made saves afterwards. So that's not meant as a criticism. But yeah. Again, for a goalie trying to find his feet and get his feet under him, to get snowed in the first period like they have consistently just makes a tough job for him that much tougher.
Appreciate the time, as always, Kev. Great stuff, and we'll do it again next week. Always great insight. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
He is Kevin Woodley. He is our goaltending expert. He joins us every Thursday here on Flames Talk, and he joins us from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery as we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk. He's Aaron Vickers. He's on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks to Connor Gronsdahl and Shan Vergie, our outstanding producers. And that'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.